This case is about a trial judge who created his own definition of a statutory term, that term being redevelopment project, and then utilized that new definition that he had created, words that he had added to the statute, as the basis to invalidate two City of St. Louis ordinances whose objective was to eliminate blight and to transform a large portion of North St. Louis, large portion of the City of St. Louis. In doing that, that trial judge gave literally no deference to the legislative finding that the Board of Aldermen had made that there was indeed a redevelopment project, a specific finding after months of hearings, months of meetings, months of notice, and months of work done by professionals in the City of St. Louis whose job it is to determine whether or not projects are there and to determine whether or not any kind of funds or other subsidies should be allocated to those projects. Now, to be sure, that judge was cynical and skeptical about whether or not this project could actually succeed. Many are. But the fact of the matter is that his cynicism and his skepticism has no place in the analysis about whether or not the statutory requirements necessary to go forward with this have been met.
Mr. Carmody, let's eliminate the judge. Let me ask you, given that I wrote the case City of Shelbina, how is this situation different in that particular case?
I thought you would ask that. Far different, Judge. The City of Shelbina did not have a developer who had invested $27 million in the project area, did not have a developer who had purchased over 880 parcels of property, acres upon acres of property that nobody in private enterprise would touch or has touched for decades. Nobody in Shelbina produced the plan, the 80-page plan, went through neighborhood meetings and did all they did. In Shelbina, you remember, Judge, because you pointed out, there isn't even a developer. What they simply did in Shelbina is say, this is it. They actually had RFPs, you pointed out, that they sent out saying, please come and what do you want to do? So essentially, in Shelbina, we've got a situation where it's totally aspirational. Golly, I'd sure like to see that developed.
So you're saying there's no plan in Shelbina, or there's no
There project? Was, in fact, a plan in Shelbina, Judge, but in terms of the project associated with that plan, the plan was let's redevelop this area. But the project component, that is, what is it that you're going to do, was simply not there. There was no developer. I think
Do you agree there needs to be a project, and the difference is how specific or broad that needs to be?
And I agree, Judge, that the statute requires that there be a redevelopment project. I will also suggest to you that the legislature said, let's keep this as broad as possible. If we wanted to say, let's go through all the things Judge Durker applies, and let's say City Block 1000 to start at this date, to finish at this date, at this cost, I wonder why they didn't say that in Section 99805. What they said there is that to satisfy the term redevelopment project, it's defined. And it says any development project within a redevelopment area in furtherance of the objectives of a redevelopment plan. I'll suggest to this court that there is no way that a large area like this of a city that really, really is the object of TIF, it's not the counties, it's not outstate that really is the one where blight exists that needs to be eradicated, that this court has recognized for decades. It's this precise area. But given the crab definition that Judge Durker gave this, that the trial court gave this, there's no way that you can get this kind of a project area done. The old days when we were doing the Washington U redevelopment areas and areas like that, I can't tell you today who's going to be on the corner of Cass and 15th Street in 10 years. We hope to God that there is a bank that'll go there, there's a grocery store that'll go there, or something that's going to go there. But the legislature recognized the flexibility necessary for projects of this nature and gave it the right, gave the city the right, and the city then chooses the developer and says, go forward and let's do this.
But the Washington University redevelopment case, if I recall correctly, the city also delegated the housing code or a higher housing code for that area than the rest of the city would have had.
Correct. There were broad delegations, Judge, as you remember in those days. This case, I should point out, does not involve the use of the power of eminent domain. So eliminate that. It's specifically carved out. The plan does not include that. This also does not involve a referendum on whether TIF's a good thing or a bad thing or a whatever thing. This simply talks about compliance. And in those days, Judge, to be sure, there was a delegation, a broad delegation, that ensued, and there was what's called an umbrella developer, whose job it was, because it couldn't happen. And remember the genesis of all of this help. This isn't going to happen privately. Certainly, there's no better place to look to than North St. Louis to get an understanding of what can happen and can't happen privately. So the idea is, what are we going to do to bring people in, like a Paul McKee, to say, come and help. What can we do to help you? Because nobody's going to come voluntarily. Secondly, what are we going to do with this grant of TIF to be able to convince people that we, the city, are committed to this area and you're not going to be there on an island by yourself? So the city says we'll say $390 million worth of TIF is available. But judges understand how that TIF works. That's not a handout. That means you, developer, take the risk. You, developer, go out and build the infrastructure, build the roads, build the sidewalks, build the sewers. And then once you do that, you come to us and you get the reimbursement. But the reimbursement has got to come with any new funds that you generate as a consequence of the redevelopment. This isn't, I'm going to tax, I'm going to do this to repay that TIF. So every single time a project is done, there's essentially a situation where we come in and we have to apply.
Now, the trial court said that you don't have to list every project in the plan, but he failed to see even one project, which he thought was a minimum mentioned, and maybe a specific date of completion. Do you think the statute does not require that?
I don't think that the statute requires the specificity that he wanted. I've got a handout there. The second page of that handout tells you, Judge Russell, in the context of your question, exactly that. Here's what was spelled out. There's a lot within the plan. We could go page after page, and I would cite you to not just what I've handed to you, but other portions of that plan that point out all that's being done, all the infrastructure, all of that. Does that satisfy the definition? And before I turn it over to Mr. Percelli, I'd like to quote to the court just for something to have you bear in mind about your depth of analysis in this, because you all may sit there and say, I don't think that meets the definition of project. It just doesn't sound right. And let me go through all the other words that Judge Durker added to that term. And, you know, I kind of agree with him. That, you know, maybe this, maybe that. This court said, though, in the Spradlin case versus City of Fulton, which we cited, this court said as follows, that some, and perhaps all, of the members of this court might have chosen differently in performing a legislative function means nothing. Out of proper respect for the role of co-equal branches of government, this court has consistently refused to second-guess local government legislative factual determinations, which this is. We factually determine that there is a redevelopment project, is what the Board of Aldermen said in those ordinances. That a statutory condition is met, unless there is a claim that the city's decision is the product of fraud, collusion, or bad faith, or is arbitrary and without support in reason or law. That is the standard that this court has delineated. That is the standard to which this court has adhered to. And again, it is not up to the judicial branch to make the decisions. Deference to the legislative branch is what is required.
One question. In the Centene case, the city of Clayton declared that the area in question was blighted. And that was a determination by the city of Clayton with the same power as the city of St. Louis.
Correct. But significant to that case, Judge, which I think we both remember fairly well, the significance in that case was that the city itself found that there was a no social liability component. Remember, that was a 353, and there were two separate components that were required. The city itself, in doing its analysis, said, we believe, our expert finds, that there is no social liability. So the question was it arbitrary for the city to declare that it was a social liability when, in fact, itself had found that there was not? Different situation.
Thank you.
Let me start, Judge Russell, with your question. I think it's important to keep in mind the definition. Is any development project within a redevelopment area in furtherance of the objectives of the redevelopment plan? Compare that with the requirements for the collection and use of increment, tax increment. Compare it with the requirements for the public hearings. Compare that with the requirements for a redevelopment plan. This tells you that in this area, the legislature made a determination it was least concerned with, once everything else had been satisfied, with how the city and its developer moved forward. It wanted to give the city...
They used the area, plan, and project, so they have to have a meaning. You assume that they use these different terms.
That's correct.
And what's the project here?
The project is once the city approved the redevelopment projects in RPAA and RPAB, that is a redevelopment project. There's nothing.
And what did they? What project? Your co-counsel has said the project, it has an example about the agreement to do things within a certain period of time. I think in your brief you refer to infrastructure improvements. Is that a separate element of the plan?
There certainly is a very specific, if you go as far as Judge Durker and you need that kind of definition, there is a very specific requirement that Mr. McKee identify property by a date certain that it will demolish and rehabilitate. And to complete that work by a date certain, that's at the plan at page 16. It's also in the redevelopment agreement as well.
Was there something else more specific about what infrastructure improvements would be done by a certain time, or did I misunderstand that in your brief?
No, I think there were commencement dates for the beginning of the infrastructure work, but there was not anything more specific.
Is that what's in the handout, or is that a separate section?
That's in the handout,
okay.
Your Honor. But I think you have to the reason it's okay to be aspirational, the reason it's okay, and keep in mind, a plan and a project can be in the same document. It's done all the time. It's done especially with site-specific TIFs. But the reason it's okay to do that is because this is a reimbursement subsidy. The specificity that Judge Durker wanted or seemed to want is built into the process of redevelopment. A redeveloper has to go to the city first, get approval to do the work. The redeveloper then spends the money, does the work, then has to go to the city with receipts in hand, establish for the city's satisfaction that this is a reimbursable cost, and then and only then is there any sort of issuance of a TIF obligation. So the specificity that Judge Durker wanted, although it's not mandated by this broad definition, is inherent in the TIF process, and even more inherent in this particular TIF process when you look at our redevelopment agreement. This agreement provided that the redeveloper had to comply with all laws, codes, and ordinances. In other words, had to go to the city, had to get building code officials to approve any type of work, had provisions regarding sustainability, had termination rights in charge for the city. in some, I think what the legislature is telling you and what should be important to this court in this type of a TIF where there is no market, where you need the ability to go to the marketplace and say, I now have the ability to provide you with the basic things that the city can't.
Do you agree that the redevelopment plan has to contain a defined project?
Yes, and the question before this court is what that project has to look like.
Okay, yeah, so the second page of Mr. Carmody's handout, you think, is enough of a definition of a true defined project?
Once you have someone signing on the dotted line with the controls that are in this redevelopment agreement and inherent in TIF, then you have a project. There's no other way to do it in this type of a project, and the legislature left it open for you.
And I think Durker's criticism is that, for example, page 2, it talks about the developer will identify any buildings and demolish such buildings, that is not specific enough as the one on the corner of Chestnut and Market.
I guess what I would ask this court and Judge Durker is, what are you trying to protect against? What is the danger here? Nobody gets any money. This is not a handout subsidy. It's a reimbursement subsidy. No one gets a single dime until you do the work to the satisfaction of the city and prove that you did it. So what are we trying to protect? So Judge Durker, quite honestly, if you look at page 37 and 46 of his opinion, did not understand TIF.
You're saying they left the definition very broad. Any development project within a redevelopment area in furtherance of the objectives of the plan, and the only requirement, specific requirement in that definition is has to be a legal description of the area selected for the project.
That's right.
And if they'd intended other specificity, it would have been listed there.
They certainly would. And Judge Durker, I think his concern arose from a misunderstanding. He says in two places, he creates this hypothetical. He says, what if the city just went out and declared itself, its entire boundaries, a TIF district, and then collected the revenues, the incremental revenues, and handed them out to people? None of that can ever happen under the TIF ordinance. The city can't declare itself blighted. The city can't just collect revenues. There's an annual accounting. The money has to go back if it's not spent on reimbursable costs. And the city can't pick and choose developers to hand it out. Someone has to do
and
reimbursable
work. For purposes
work.
Of this appeal, I know it was contested below, but the blight findings, if I understand, is not at issue for purposes of this appeal.
Right.
The finding that there was blight is not an issue in this appeal.
I think they've waived that in their briefs.
In the opposing counsel.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pichelli.
May it please the court, my name is Beavis Schock. I represent Elkie McIntosh and Cheryl Nelson in this matter. I'd like to start at the conclusion of Mr. Percelli's presentation. He said no one is harmed. And if we look at the third page of the handout, there are pictures at the top of a Nordstrom, and then down below we have terrible looking buildings and a church with a little steeple just like it's 9/11. And he said no one is harmed. But I represent people who have been harmed. And the blinders of our opponents to their loss is somewhat startling. It is undisputed in the record that Ms. Nelson's house had a lowered value because it was blighted by this ordinance. So who is harmed? My client is harmed.
Can I clarify, though? There's no condemnation here. It is not a question of getting the power to condemn your client's homes. You're saying it affected their value, is that?
Their value has been reduced as a result of the blight designation. That is a harm.
Okay.
Now, there's been a lot of back and forth over whether eminent domain will ever be used, and we debated that both in the press and in the legal. I read all of it to say they can come back and use eminent domain later. They don't foreclose it completely.
Can you address clearly, the definition of redevelopment project does not use the word shovel-ready and specific, such as were used in the opinion. Are you saying it does, nonetheless it has to be that specific, or what are you saying, how specific does it have to be?
All we're asking this court to do is follow the statute, and so I'd like to draw the attention of the court to three different sections to answer your question. The first section is 805.14, and that's already been quoted by opposing counsel, and that's the section that defines what a redevelopment project is. And it separates out the plan from the project. A redevelopment project is something that is within the plan. So it is distinct. When we talk in this case about a finding being arbitrary, I think that refers to whether, for example, the cost-benefit analysis or the bank financing is so ridiculous that we can't possibly believe it, so it's arbitrary. But this is a little different. The issue here is whether they simply complied or not with the statute. In 805.14, it separates out plan from project, just like in Shelbina discussed, without any regard to whether the developer was named or not. So then we go to 810, which contains a requirement for the application. It says, shall have the estimated redevelopment project costs. So the statute is using a term that has been defined elsewhere. We go back to the term where it's defined, the section where it's defined, and it says it is something different than the plan. So it seems as though the statute is using the term as it has been defined, as you'd expect the legislature to do. Then we go to 845, and I want to note there's a typo in my brief at page 57. I referred to this section as 810. It's 845, and I think it's clear by context, but I'll just note that to the court.
Can I clarify for a second?
Yes, sir.
Because I thought you argued in your brief that it didn't meet 99.810.5, which talks about not having a cost-benefit analysis, and that refers to the plan. Cost-benefit analysis of the plan. Are you now saying you say it doesn't comply with 99.810.1 regarding the estimated redevelopment project cost generally?
What I'm trying to do is answer your earlier question, which was the definition of redevelopment project. Is it okay if I do that?
Sure, please go
okay.
ahead.
Okay, because I think that's the heart of this case. When we get to 810, which is the requirement of what is in the application, there is a use of the term redevelopment project. That's all I'm trying to say to the court. And that's what they don't have.
They're two distinct things.
I'm sorry? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, one thing, you mentioned the circumstances of your client, which are very, obviously very important, but and we talk about the specific intent of the legislature, what legislation says. But it's clear that when the legislature passed these kinds of laws, TIF laws, they intended for the cities and municipalities to be able to redevelop their communities in a healthy fashion so they can grow as a community. Otherwise, they wouldn't have just leave it up to the market forces. So it was anticipated that the city would exercise its authority, whatever it be, to accumulate land, accumulate plans, so they can redevelop using private resources their cities.
Absolutely. But they didn't give carte blanche. They said we're going to have a limit on it. And no doubt this was fought over in the legislature with back and forth, and lobbyists were there, and they fought over every word. But at the end, they said you have to have a project.
Well, and opposing counsels just said they agree they have to have a project, and they say this is adequate to be the project. So can you address why you don't believe it is?
Absolutely. It's in the handout. Page 2, as Justice Russell pointed out, will. The critical word is will in the second line. Developer will identify buildings. Will. That's not stating a project that we're working on. That's aspirations for a project.
Well, they're saying their project is to demolish buildings that are blighted within the blighted area. So they have to have identified each building. Does each one have to be a separate project, or what would be adequate here?
Judge Durker, I think, tried to draw it as narrowly as it could possibly be done, which, of course, courts are supposed to do. He said, I don't know how big the project has to be. I don't know how many there have to be. But there has to be something specific. And I think in that sense, Judge Durker got it exactly right.
But meanwhile, 810 says each redevelopment plan shall set forth in writing a general description of the program. I guess program meaning project, but it says a general description. So where's the specificity required?
The specificity is required because of the definition of redevelopment project, which is distinct from the plan. When we argue the statutory analysis here, I will say one. If I had to say my whole argument in one word is distinct, separate. There has to be a specific project stated.
Mr. Schock, I appreciate your argument, but your counsel seems to be standing up, ready to.
He's very eager. Could I say one more thing in response to Judge Stitt's very earlier question? I'll limit myself to 15 seconds. Just in 845, Your Honor, that's the third section we talked about, the one there was the miscitation to. It just talks about a project again in the same way, and it's clear that you're to follow the definition earlier. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Good morning. I'd like to address the question that was asked with respect to shovel ready, and I'd like to complete that sentence that the court wrote out. Shovel ready says, as part of the process of securing, and especially, I left out a couple of words, as a prerequisite to creating a special allocation account. In other words, in order to get the special allocation money that's designed, set up for the TIF account, that's what he's saying shovel ready means.
So you're saying that he wasn't requiring it to be shovel ready?
No, what I'm saying is that the judge is saying, the trial judge, as well as the Court of Appeals, which agreed with the trial judge, is specifically stating that it has to be something shovel-ready in order to get the money set aside for the TIF, not that it has to be shovel-ready at the time that the project is submitted to the TIF Commission or to the Board of Aldermen.
So at this point, it need not be shovel-ready, but at a later point to get the actual money, it will.
Right, and that completes that sentence.
So what does it need to be to constitute a project, in your view, then? What is the definition that the trial court used of what has to be, how specific that designation of a project has to be in order to comply, to be sufficient for the city to have passed the ordinance?
Well, the trial judge just said that, well, one of the things I noticed is that the trial judge used a dictionary that's the same dictionary that you have in the library here, and that he didn't say that he just defined the term specific to say that it had to be something that you could identify.
There were a lot of definitions in both briefs, and they covered a lot of ground. Some were very specific, some were very, very broad. So if the I'm not sure the dictionary provides a total answer here.
Well, because the term was redevelopment project.
Right.
And so there's a redevelopment cost, there's redevelopment.
The word redevelopment project is defined in the statute extremely broadly. Where does all this additional definition come from? The legislature didn't put it in the statute.
I don't think it's an additional definition because it basically follows Shell Viner, which didn't have a project. And what the court is saying here is there was no project to identify as specific or even general or even nonspecific.
But they're arguing and that there is a project, and I'd like you to more specifically address what they claim is the project and why you don't think it's adequate under the statute.
Well, after this morning, I'm not sure what they're claiming their project is. The question was asked, what is your project? And they have yet to tell us what their project specifically is.
Well, do I understand your briefs, or am I misreading them, that you think infrastructure cannot be a project, infrastructure improvements?
Well, the statute that talks about infrastructure specifically states that in order to receive the TIF, the money for the TIF can only be used for infrastructure development. So what they're saying is, what their previous argument was, their project was infrastructure development. So they're saying their project is infrastructure development in order to get infrastructure money.
And you agree you can get infrastructure money if you have a project, but you're disagreeing that this is a project.
Right, because they don't, first of all, the redevelopment project has to be turned over to the TIF Commission, and the TIF Commission has to have a hearing on it.
They apparently thought it was okay to say, we've got this big plan area, we're going to look at it. A lot of the buildings are in bad shape. We're going to identify those and demolish them by a date certain. And that is our project, and that when you're dealing with a large area like this, that's okay to do. And you're saying, no, you have to be more specific. And I'm asking, just like we asked them on what they base, they're saying it could be so general. On what do you base that it has to be so specific?
Well, what they're saying is that they have a project identified in their agreement with the city. And that was never submitted to the TIF commission, which would then submit it to the public for a public hearing. And neither of those things were done.
So you're saying they were specific too late in the process?
I'm not saying it was specific at all, because it's not clear what their project is. We didn't know where this housing, they're saying now that it's a...
Well, they're saying it was, I mean, there was many things, but one was that it was demolition of buildings that... Within the project area to set it. This is what they're saying here.
And the statutes specifically state that you have to identify where that project is going to be, how much it's going to cost, and how the finance is going to take place, and when it's going to be paid back. And that should be put into the cost-benefit analysis and specifically identified.
But the cost-benefit for the plan, not for the project.
The cost-benefit analysis is for the project
plan. No, it's for the plan. You have to have some other costs for the project. But
okay, well,
the plan, sub-5, is just right. For the plan.
Okay. What I wanted to go through quickly my what I had prepared, but I wanted to address those couple of things. They have basically three legal arguments that we didn't really get into. One is that the TIF commission approved the plan. One, the Board of Aldermen approved the plan, and three, the cities and Northside have an agreement, and therefore that's their legal argument and basis for stating that the what was passed should go through, basically saying because the city passed it, because the TIF commission passed it, there's no reason why the court should overturn what those two entities had passed in the agreement. And if you look at the TIF, the agreement between the city and Northside is full of we may do this, we might do this, we may do this, as well as stating that, the developer has the right to get out of it at any time or any point that he doesn't owe the city any money. He can just escape from the whole thing and not do anything. Under this particular agreement, the developer doesn't actually have to do anything in order to collect the tax credit amount, which is about $20 million a year, which he's already collected about 30, without doing anything. He doesn't actually have to build any infrastructure in order for it to just sit there, because there's no specific date that he has to actually start. There are some tentative dates that he should start here, but in no circumstances should he start there or another place. In support of their legal argument, they're saying that the project is too big to fail. Because it's a big project, they should escape the requirements of the statute, and the city should have a wider latitude than any other entity in order to allow this particular piece
but
of
the Mill Creek project was tried, and so was the Pruitt-Igoe tried, and they weren't great successes necessarily, but the city has to try, don't they, to develop its city.
That's if they have a project. But if there's no project, then you have no idea what they're going to do.
Can you address the preservation issue? I mean, if I understand the briefs, that you're saying that because you said they failed to comply with the statute, that was adequate to preserve the specific issue that they failed to have a specifically identified project. Are there any cases that would support that broad a pleading being adequate to preserve a specific argument like that?
You mean you want me to support their point?
I want you to support your point, which is that you say you preserved the issue that they didn't have a project. But even though that's not in the pleadings, by saying that in the pleadings you did say they didn't comply with the statute, and the statute requires a project.
Right.
And that's, I'm not familiar with a case that says you can broadly plead you failed to comply with statutes and law, and that's adequate to cover any specific violation of the statutes or law.
The petition specifically states that they did not comply with the statute and some of the requirements. Some of them were identified.
But this one wasn't, and you're saying that should be enough, and I'm asking if you have any sites that would make that sufficient.
It was identified the day we started trial in the motion for eliminate, motion in eliminate, and it was specifically identified that there was no project that, and it was a motion, and it was also a memorandum stating and identifying every place in the plan where the word project or redevelopment project was stated, and it never identified any particular project or cost or anything related to a project that could be discerned from or determined from or viewed as something that was to be built within the plan, because
Your motion in limine, if I understood correctly, was directed to prohibiting them from introducing evidence of a specific project, and that was taken with the case. Did you plead that they failed to comply with the statutory requirement that they have a specific project?
Yeah, that part was in the original pleading, and then this was sort of like a supplement to that. And then it was the court, once we pointed out to the court that there was no project, then it was Judge Durker who looked to see if there was a project and determined that we were correct, that there wasn't a project. And because there's no project, then the plan is insufficient under the statute.
Because Judge Durker is he incorrect in saying then he went beyond your pleadings? Because I thought he said that he didn't find the point you had made well taken, but on his own he saw this as a problem.
Well, he didn't say he didn't find it well taken. He just said that it wasn't specifically stated in the original petition, but it was brought to his attention specifically by that particular motion. And as a result of that particular motion, he said, well, there he detected. And he was saying that detection was from or as a result of what we had filed the day before trial started.
Thank you.
Which, you know, objections were taken and so forth. Okay. If the project is only in the bulk of it is contained in the agreement between the city and the developer and never brought before the TIF commission or the public, then that violates the statute by itself, whether there was a particular a redevelopment project or not. We're saying, however, that there was no redevelopment agreement. As a matter of fact, both counsel have cited this table of content, this the city cited this table on page 8 of its reply brief, and this table purports to be within the plan, or it is within the plan, but they identify it as a project, as part of the project, and the project is more specific thereafter. But if you look at the third column, it says property acquisition and relocation. So in other words, they haven't even specifically identified the property that's going to be consistent with whatever this is. This is actually an estimated TIF-funded project cost. In other words, this is the money they're asking for the city to give back to them, and it's not actually a redevelopment project. So, it says they're going to put something in A and something in B, but A and B are both large swaths of North St. Louis. Are they going to put it in the north section of A, the south section of A, the south section of B, or the, I guess that would be the east section of B? It doesn't say where it's going to go, whatever it is.
I think opposing counsel, I'm guessing, would argue in rebuttal that those might be great things that maybe should be required, but the statute doesn't require it. That's an argument better addressed to the legislature.
The statute does require that they identify where they're going to put it and how much each of them is going to cost. And so this only identifies the TIF money that they want back.
Which section are you relying on for that? They have to at this time? They have to identify it at this time as opposed to later in the process?
Right, right. And
which section of the statute are you relying on for that?
Well, it's stated in a bunch of places. 99.825.3, 99.825.1, 99.810, I believe 1.5, talks about built and not built.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the argument.
Thank you.
Your Honor, it was not pleaded and it was not litigated. And that's why to this day, the plaintiffs and the interveners have never identified and can't identify what they think a project is under the statute. I can tell you one thing for absolute certain. The statute does not say shovel ready. It does not say specific. It does not say concrete in any of the sections that Mr. Amon just cited to you. I would direct the court to a section that Mr. Schock pointed to but didn't read far enough. That's 99-805-15 that defines redevelopment project costs to include costs incidental to a redevelopment plan. So where is the project? The project in this instance, given the breadth of this statute, the plan and the project can be one and the same, often are and are here. Once that plan is approved, and once those redevelopment projects are approved and the developer signs on the line, you now have a difference from Shelbina. That is a redevelopment project. And in the real development world, that's how this project is going to look on day one. Because we don't have streets. We don't have sewers. We can't go to Home Depot and say, come on in, guys. Because we don't even have streets or sewers or electric to support it. We have to have that first. We have to have the ability to go to these users and say, we now have the ability to provide what the city can provide.
And opposing counsel saying, if I understand correctly, well, then you could have said, we propose on streets A, B, C, D, and E to put in sewers, to put in electric, to put in this, but you weren't that specific and you needed to be at least that specific.
And there's nothing in the statute that says that or requires it, and they wouldn't, because that specificity, as I said, is built in to the process, to the TIF process. As you move forward, you have to identify the project, you have to identify the work, you have to do the work, and then go to the city with your receipts in hand. It's not necessary on day one to make that, to have that kind of specificity, because the city is going to get it. The city is protected in all instances. I would make one point. If you think that Judge Durker was right and this court decides to add that language to the statute, the redevelopment plan and agreement both include that very specific language about demolition and rehabilitation of properties, both. So to Mr. Amon's argument, that plan was most definitely approved by the TIF Commission, and it's all in there in both documents. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Carmody, I consider you a true expert in the field. You've litigated these cases here and other places. Are there any other projects like this, or not projects, plans, areas like this anywhere in the state?
Judge, this is the only way this can happen. Chesterfield Valley, a TIF project. 20 years ago, I stood in an overpass and could not see the top of a building in then Chesterfield Valley because it was many, many feet underwater. Transformed today. Why? A TIF project that says if we build it, to quote Judge Durker, they may come. They have. The city of Joplin is now considering a TIF. What happens when you have a tornado that rips the guts out of your city? Do I know what's going to go back on the corner of Main and Main? My God, I just got hit with a tornado. How do I know who's going to go there, what's going to happen? We have to have that flexibility. And what we've proven this morning is that all of us could sit in a room and debate what a project is. I think the project, the start of this project, was the project of entering into the redevelopment agreement. Believe me, I know the nature of what the city required of the developer in just that part of the process. I may start a redevelopment project on my house, the first portion of which is executing a contract, getting architectural drawings. Those are all projects associated with the larger project. But the fact of the matter is, regardless of what we all think, I think the court said in Spradlin, and I think this court has said all along, project is defined in the statute. It doesn't say shovel ready. It doesn't say we need meets and bounds for the specific, here's where the first shovel is going to go. Highway 141 in St. Louis County, large project. Do we care where the first square foot is going to go, or do we talk about that as being a large project? The fact of the matter is, I have, not to disappoint the Chief Justice, I made sure that I at least had an aerial. And here's the significance of that aerial, because it goes directly, Judge Teitelman, to the case that you had, that you sat on, and Judge Russell, you sat on. That's the West County Mall case we cite in our briefs. And in that case, you decided and you wrote, it's hard for us, it may seem illogical, that the greatest economic asset of the city of De Pere, West County Mall, a fairly new mall, is an economic liability. It doesn't seem to ring true. But the fact of the matter is, we must adhere to our standard of review. Same here as here. Let the city of St. Louis decide. Don't you think the concept of project and what are you going to do, what are you going to do, came about over and over again? And don't you think the city is most interested in making certain that whatever it approves is implemented? Now, to conclude, the trial court wrote at the very beginning the quote from Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. There are many that would say, let's see if they come. Maybe they will come. Maybe they'll do what happened in Chesterfield Valley. Lord knows, we hope so. But the fact of the matter is, maybe they won't. Maybe it'll be a failure. What will we have? Maybe just some new streets, some new sewers, some new sidewalks. But it may be a failure. But the question before this court is, should it be a judge, should it be this court that says, no, don't even try it, to somebody who says, I want to dedicate the rest of my life to make a difference? Should it be this court, or should TIF be reserved simply for the Nordstroms of the world and not for the areas most blighted and most in need of this kind of help? That's the question. Thank you.
Thank you very much.